most people need more strength. And the restorative poses and movement, we need to move more, like breathe less, move more. That's sort of my motto. And restorative yoga for somebody like the person that I just described, that could be like at the end of a movement practice to put them in a restorative pose could be a nice way to help them, you know, relax. But they need to move first because they're sitting on their ass too much. Like they need to move. And then a lot of yoga classes I have a big issue with because the focus is on flexibility, and people who are already very flexible have loose fascia, loose connective tissue and are very flexible. They start off in yoga feeling like they're the star of the class because unlike you, they can do everything right from square one. However, and then the teachers are like, oh, you look so beautiful, do that more. They end up actually injuring themselves. They're at high risk for injury in traditional yoga classes. And what they really need is to go to the gym and get strong and stop stretching so much. So I always say you can't stretch it better, because even whether you're super tight or super loose, strength is an important variable in there. And there has to be a balance between stretch, strength, and relaxation. It's the balance. And yoga is really about the balance. It's not about flexibility. It's really about adaptability, resilience, which is a completely different thing. And resilience requires some stability, some inner stability, whether we're talking stability around your structure or your breath or your mind, right?
Welcome to Take a Deep Breath. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm your breathwork host and breathwork coach. And my job on this breathcast is to bring you the greatest, most interesting, wonderful breathing and health people, interview them, try and understand their techniques, their history, their backstory, so I can bring you some practical tips and tricks and techniques so that we can all feel better. And today's guest is Robin Rothenberg, and she has been a wonderful healing presence today. So I'm so excited to share this with you. She is the author of a book called Restoring Prana. She's been a yoga teacher and healer for many, many years. And she studied with Patrick McEwan, who wrote The Oxygen Advantage. And that's how I heard of her. And I watched that podcast and was just drawn. I thought, I have to speak to and meet Robin. So we hooked it up over email, and today we've just finished the session. Now I'm a little bit disheveled because I've just finished a breathing exercise with her as well. And so in this breathcast, you're going to hear about the origins of prana, what it is, the diaphragm, panic, how we should be breathing before we do the fancy breath work. But also she guides us through a really lovely exercise to help get our diaphragms and bellies moving and restore some of our core, our strong core. And some interesting stuff about breath holds as well. So there's the highlights. Stick around for the whole thing, because right at the end, you're going to get that wonderful breathing exercise. Robin's got a course out. She teaches many different things when it comes to breath work and yoga. I've linked to that down below in the description, so please check out that. I really love talking to Robin, and I think I've convinced her to do a part two as well, because an hour just isn't enough sometimes when you're speaking to people. And here we are, sort of 40 episodes into breathcast, and you think, how much more is there to talk about breathing? Every time I learn different things, just learn some powerful things about breath holds and being able to kind of lock things in. I'll let Robin explain it. So enjoy that. Just a couple of messages before we get stuck in, as usual. So number one, please check out my other YouTube channel, Binaural Beats Unleashed. The link is below. I'll see if I can get it to come up here somewhere. This is a completely free YouTube channel where I'm working with different musical artists to bring different music for different states. So what does that really mean? So if you want to do some study, there's some great music there to help you focus, kind of a 3-hour study track. If you want to relax, if you want to go to sleep, if you want to energize yourself, there's different kind of frequencies and tones and ways that the music's set up. I like it for what I call like non-guided breath work. So sometimes you want to sit there, lay down, hand on the chest, hand on the belly, and just breathe however I want to breathe. And I'll stick on one of these tracks and it'll just get me into a nice, relaxed space. So Binaural Beats Unleashed, If you could click on that link, that would be incredible. If you're not following us on Instagram, takeadeepbreath.co.uk, come and join the tribe, the breath tribe over on Instagram, and we'd welcome you over there as well. And just to give you an update, the course, the functional breathing course, it's nearly done. I'm really excited to share that with you. And we're going to be doing something around a week's worth of breathing challenges just to get us into that mode. So just working on all that in the background now, hoping to have that out before Christmas. So you'll join me hopefully on YouTube every day, and we'll be doing some different breath work Monday through to Saturday to get us in that space and get us thinking about all different wonderful things to do with breathing. So without further ado, I introduce you to Robin, author of Restoring Prana, and a wonderful person to do with breathing and yoga and health. So take it away. Cheers. Okay, so I have hit record now, Robin. So we are on the Take a Deep Breath podcast. Thank you so much for your time. So grateful. For the audience, I came across you through the wonderful Patrick McEwen. And so I'm really excited to talk to you today about breathing and yoga. But first of all, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Glad to be here, Mike.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. And I'm really glad to have you here as well. So I always like to know a person's backstory, because I think that's the most interesting thing, isn't it? We learn through stories. They're so fascinating. So I'm just really keen to understand a little bit about what your journeys look like, how you got to being the person that's sitting here today, that's, you know, wrote books, teaches yoga. So would you mind just sharing with us a little bit about how you, you know, the highlights maybe, if that's okay?
Yeah, sure. So there are a combination of stories that actually could be braided together to help you to understand like how it is that I'm here with you. One aspect of my story is that I was chronically ill as a child. I had chronic throat infections, tonsillitis, strep throat, ear infections, had tubes put in my ears, chronic cough, was always really sickly, couldn't do a lot of, you know, like overnights with my friends, I'd be sick for 2 weeks afterwards. Mm-hmm. Was very physically unfit and deconditioned. So I was kind of a reading, writing kind of brainiac in my head, because my physical body, I didn't really have a relationship with my physical body other than it was sick. Mm-hmm. And I'd get tired really quickly. I didn't seem to have what other kids had, you know, like other kids who would do sports and, you know, be sort of running around on the playground. And I always felt like it was like slogging through mud, you know, just even to walk. But I didn't know anything different. So that's just how it was. And I, as I got older, became a young adult, again, the chronic cough and the chronic sort of, myalgia, kind of achiness, pain in my body continued. I got married. I had two children. I ended up in premature labor with both of my daughters. And again, didn't think much of it at the time other than my body's weak. I can't even hold my babies. It was sort of like this, you know, this kind of woe is me, my poor body phenomenon, but also a sense of helplessness around it. And then after my second daughter was born, I started yoga. And from the very first class, there was some kind of shift in me. Like I felt better. I didn't hurt so much. I didn't feel so much like I, you know, was as tired as I usually am. And I noticed it would last for about 24 hours, which is interesting because in more recent times, there's actually been studies that show yoga's efficacy. It's like you take a pill and it's good for 24 hours. Like there's a dosing factor in that. And so it's about 24 hours. So if you want to feel good on Wednesday, you have to do your yoga practice on Tuesday and practice on Wednesday to feel good on Thursday like that. So, but I felt it from the inside, like, wow, I feel good for the next day. And then I start to kind of go back into the trend of fatigue and achiness. And so then I started doing yoga more often, right? So I went to classes 2 times a week and 3 times a week. And at some point I said, I get it. I just have to do this every day. This seems to make a big difference. So I became a yoga teacher, and that was over 30 years ago. And because of my own history, of course, I wasn't able to like jump in and do what you might see on the cover of yoga magazines. I was I was not physically fit. I was super, my body was super tight and weak. And so I ended up accruing a lot of injuries because my mind is also very ambitious, let's say. So I would see what other people would do and be like, hell, I can do that too, right? And then I ended up, you know, like wrecking my sacrum and tearing my hamstring and my rotator cuff and compressing discs in my back and my neck and, you know, a variety of things because of the, there was this incongruence between my body and my mind. And so I was feeling better health-wise, but structurally, like I was really wreaking havoc on my body. So because of the combination of that, I gravitated towards therapeutic yoga and learning how the art of adaptation and how to adapt postures and adapt different kinds of movement practices to actually support healing, kind of like rehabilitation, as opposed to, you know, push and this more aggressive orientation. So in 2000, I became a yoga therapist. And a big part of my training was also around the breath and pranayama and meditative practices. And because of my history with breathing, I was always very interested in pranayama, although in the first 13 years, the style of yoga that I was studying was not very generous, let's say, in its orientation towards pranayama. It was pretty much physical, you know, postures. It was what a lot of people think of as yoga, although yoga is much richer and deeper than that. And I'm happy to share more on that. But it is not just about asana or postures or sun salutations. That is an unfortunate dilution of this very deep system and study and practice of transformation of the mind, which is really what yoga is. So I was interested in more in terms of the breath. And so when I turned to the Vinny Yoga or the lineage of Krishnamacharya, which was what I ended up studying with for my therapeutic work, I was very drawn to the breath-centric focus of that. And I found that there were a lot of benefits for me in working with the breath and putting more attention to the breath and syncing movement with the breath and thinking about the breath as a focal point as opposed to, you know, the alignment specifically as a focal point. Alignment is important, but actually fundamentally on a level in terms of our health and well-being mentally and physically, the breath is actually more important even than alignment. So kind of marrying those two orientations and with that focus on the breath. And then, and so at that point, my body was feeling better. I was feeling stronger and more able. My health was good. Things were on a roll. And then a variety of things came up that put a lot of stress in my life. My mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, my husband with MS. I started my own therapist training program, which required me to teach 10 hours a day for 10 days straight. And my granddaughter, my first granddaughter was born and I was taking care of her, which involves a lot of cooing and talking and, you know, like that, a lot of output of energy, mostly yes. through this right here. And I started having some of the same, it felt like I was regressing. I started having some of the same symptoms. My chronic cough came back. I started feeling really tired all the time. And some of the achiness came back. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, why? I mean, I know there's stress and there's a lot of responsibility on my shoulders, but this feels like something I don't understand. So as it turned out, I got sick. I got a upper respiratory infection, which I hadn't gotten one of those for many, many years. But again, it was a kind of replay of the old version of me, which, you know, had this kind of chronic, respiratory, fragility. And I just, after the virus ended, I just couldn't stop coughing. And I coughed for 3 months straight. I mean, I couldn't sleep. And I tried all my pranayamas, all the things I had learned in yoga school, and nothing was making it better. If anything, they were making it worse. And it was at that point that I found Patrick through one of my students who had asthma, and she had eradicated a lot of her symptoms doing buteyko breathing. And I remembered that, and I thought, because my doctor said, Robin, you have asthma, and she she gave me an inhaler and I was like, me, I have asthma? Like, no. And so I thought, okay, I got to call this student and find out more. So I started studying with her and doing some Buteyko, and the difference was like night and day. And my cough settled down probably 75% within the first week. I slept through the night and I slept deeply. The achiness went away. My energy started coming back. My brain fog cleared. And I'm like, what the heck? Because this is the opposite of everything I learned in yoga school, like breathe big and deep, right? And then with Buteyko, I was being taught to breathe less and less and hold, do those breath holds, much longer breath holds than I had done. I had done some breath holds in yoga, but not consistently every day, multiple times a day, working with breath suspension. And I could feel the difference. I mean, and because I have a scientific mind, I was just fascinated. I was like, I just want to do this, an ambitious mind. So then I'm like, I want to do this more. I want to figure this out. So I flew to Ireland and studied with Patrick, and my mind was just like, you know, a whirlwind trying to put together all the chemistry and the physiology, none of which I had been exposed to. Even in my in-depth therapeutic yoga training, I had not been exposed to respiratory physiology and the, you know, the alchemy between oxygen and CO2 and nitric oxide. None of those things were ever really brought up, other than oxygen is good. And really the message was CO2 is bad. So anyway, as I'm sitting there in Patrick's studio, I'm thinking, I have got to figure this out and I have to bring this back to my yoga colleagues, because this is stuff we need to know. We're teaching people these intense breathing practices and we don't even understand what functional breathing is. We don't even have a baseline for understanding basic respiratory physiology. How is this okay? So I made it my mission to get enough of a grasp of the physiology and the chemistry to be able to translate it. And in that process of studying that piece, I also went back to the original Vedic teachings, the original teachings on pranayama from the more ancient texts. So kind of jumping over the heads, let's say, of the contemporary teachers that I'd studied with. And what I found is that pranayama means breathe less. The pranayama actually means breath suspension and breath retention. It doesn't actually mean breathe more. And that the key to the health benefits and the mental calm that is associated with pranayama has everything to do with what's known as kumbhakas, which are the periods of the breath phase, you know, cycle, where you are not breathing, where you either retaining your breath after inhale or retaining your breath after exhale. And I was like, well, what the, like, how come, like, what got lost in translation? How come this isn't what we're learning and what we're teaching in yoga school? And so, so I realized I had to write a book. And so I wrote my book, Restoring Prana, which is all about taking these ancient teachings and taking the actual facts about respiratory physiology and chemistry and working them together, weaving them together so that there's a new version of how to look at and work with these different pranayamas, these different wonderful techniques that were designed by the yogis. But we're, as I understand it, we're coming from a place of assuming that people are functional breathers to begin with, which is not the starting place for 99% of the people walking around in modern culture. Yes. But if you're a functional breather, yeah, you can manipulate the breath and do these, you know, really, you know, big ratios with retention and suspension, and you can do the hyperventilation and with Kapalabhati and Bhastrika, some of these more intense practices, and it's going to be safe. But if you take somebody who is stressed out, anxiety ridden, doesn't sleep, doesn't digest well, is drinking coffee, sugar all day long, living in an over insulated, overheated house and sitting at a computer all day, and exercising very little, and this is not an exaggeration, a huge portion of the Western world lives just like that. Their breath is highly dysfunctional and dysregulated. And if they go to a yoga class and you tell them to breathe more, well, honey, you're taking them in the wrong direction. They're already breathing in excess of their metabolic production of CO2, and it's going to make them feel worse ultimately, not better.
Yeah. Wow. Well,
so
that was a wonderful a couple of points I want to pick up on there, but thank you. That was ace. Just going back to some of your yoga things, first of all, when you were in the class and you were trying to, I resonated because I have a very competitive mind, and I was lucky enough to spend a month in Bali at the Yoga Barn a couple of years ago. And I was doing yoga every day, and it was wonderful. But it was probably, as Max Strom had said, and I think in one of his books, he was the least flexible person in the class. That was me. I was the least flexible person, but I wasn't okay with that at the time.
Yeah.
And so I was really pushing myself. And interestingly, it wasn't my favorite class, but it probably was the best class. Was this one yoga instructor that would make you shut your eyes for the whole session. And so suddenly I wasn't in competition with anybody else in the class. Yeah. It was just with me. And so I didn't, you know, even though I could kind of fake it to make my arm look like it was straight up in the air, but I knew wasn't fake, but I was doing that to look like everybody else. And so, that's really interesting. I don't know if I've mastered that now, but I feel like my ego is a little bit more in check in terms of it's okay to be inflexible, but I think restorative yoga is the one that interests me, which sounds like is your path.
No, it's not. I want to really clarify that. Restorative yoga, I do utilize restorative yoga postures, which are mostly passive supported postures over using props. I do use those in my therapeutic practice, but in my experience, and again, I have quite an extensive experience in working therapeutically with people with structural, like chronic pain issues, physiologic issues, chronic health issues, as well as psycho-emotional anxiety, depression, chronic stress, and related issues to that. Most people need more strength. And the restorative poses and movement, we need to move more, like breathe less, move more. That's sort of my motto. And restorative yoga for somebody like the person that I just described, that could be like at the end of a movement practice to put them in a restorative pose could be a nice way to help them, you know, relax.
Yes.
But they need to move first because they're sitting on their ass too much. Like they need to move. And then a lot of yoga classes I have a big issue with because the focus is on flexibility, and people who are already very flexible have loose fascia, loose connective tissue, and are very flexible. They start off in yoga feeling like they're the star of the class because unlike you, they can do everything right from square one. Yeah. However, and then the teachers are like, oh, you look so beautiful, do that more. They end up actually injuring themselves. They're at high risk for injury in traditional yoga classes. And what they really need is to go to the gym and get strong and stop stretching so much. So I always say you can't stretch it better because even whether you're super tight or super loose, strength is an important variable in there. And there has to be a balance between stretch, strength, and relaxation. It's the balance. And yoga is really about the balance. It's not about flexibility. It's really about adaptability, resilience, which is a completely different thing. And resilience requires some stability, some inner stability, whether we're talking stability around your structure or your breath or your mind, right? Yes.
Yeah.
You have to be able to come back to center and hold your ground.
Yeah, no, that's it's the second time I've heard that this year, that message, because I've had chronic back problems now for a couple of years, and I was speaking to a physiotherapist on the phone, and I was saying, well, yeah, I've been really stretching for the last year and it still hasn't got any better. And he said the same thing. He's like, you need to build your strength. I was like, no, I don't think so. I feel like I need to stretch more because I'm so tight. But that was probably 6 months ago. And I've introduced now some resistance training, and touch wood, things are a little bit better. So that's really interesting, because I thought the only cure was to stretch all day long. You know, that's the only way to get around it. But it's balance, isn't it?
It is. And if you think about it, the analogy I use is if you're chronically weak, if there's muscles that are weak, what's going to happen is other muscles are going to come in and try and fill the gap. So yes, they're going to tighten, lock down, and create kind of a splinting action around it. And if you stretch, then you stretch, what you do is you loosen that surface splinting a little bit, but there's underlying weakness and vulnerability. So it's like a boomerang effect. It'll like, oh no, that's not, you know, safe there, right? So then it's going to lock down even more. So you have to get underneath and actually strengthen those more intrinsic, those deep muscles, the stabilizers, core muscles, which yes, most people think are the rectus abdominis, and it's not, it's deeper than that, not six pack muscles. Those are the surface ones for show. So anyway, but getting in and working. So the low back is actually the other area of my expertise, and I've been involved in two published studies. The one that was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine and the other in the Archives of Internal Medicine, with a protocol on using yoga therapy in a balanced way to stretch, strengthen, and relax combination. And we had really great results. 78% of the people got better in the first.
Oh, wow.
So if you want some help with your back, happy to help.
Okay.
I do this kind of thing online.
Yeah. Okay.
Sessions with people from all over the world. So happy to work with you.
Let's have a conversation afterwards. Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
So
just thinking about towards the end of your introduction then around foundations of breathing. And for me, as you know, I went straight into the Wim Hof retreat. And that was my first, as we spoke before we hit record, about breathing. And I was already a mouth breather. So maybe I wasn't the chronic mouth breather that I was maybe as a child, but once I studied with Patrick last year, it really became evident to me that, let's get that base sorted first, because if you're in that kind of fight or flight all day, and now let's do some big, heavy breathing, well, that's not good, is it? That's just going to stress you out even more. And so what do you say to people then? How do you get them on the path of let's get your foundation right? What does that look like for you? Is it a long period of time? Do you start with something simple? How would you start to bring people on that journey of let's get you to be a functional breather?
Yeah. So simple is a really important word. When people are in a state of fight or flight, when people are dealing with chronic health issues, they often, I already mentioned it, aren't digesting well, aren't sleeping well. Those are both directly related to also aren't breathing well. Their nervous system is cranked up. And so with sympathetic dominance and so with that, the brain actually doesn't learn well in that state. Mm-hmm. Plenty of studies show that the best state of mind for learning new things is a relaxed state of mind. So when one is basically wired as if the lion's chasing them, then they're only real thought is survival. How do I get out of here? How do I get safe? It's not, you know, a good time to learn calculus or breath physiology necessarily, right? So keeping the teaching simple is one of the most important pieces that I've learned and utilized in my orientation when I'm working with people with highly dysfunctional breathing patterns. Because the first order of business is to get their nervous system calmed down. As their nervous system relaxes and their mind relaxes, their breath will relax, will have more success in shifting their breathing patterns. And as their breathing shifts, they'll be more in that relaxed state. And then I can layer on more complexity and more educational information, right? So it has to be really at a level that they can take in. I think probably one of the most distinct differences between the way that I work with a breath than say Patrick or people who work more in the traditional Buteyko perspective, because of my orientation towards movement and my understanding of anatomy and physiology, and like not just like breath physiology, but how the body works, and this work that I mentioned with the back, I've been teaching core breathing, abdominal diaphragmatic breathing, which has to do with the biomechanical piece of breath, as opposed to the biochemical piece of the breath, which are two very important aspects of breathing, along with the third, which is the psycho-emotional piece of the breath. So I work with people getting them out of chest breathing, out of paradoxical breathing, pretty much right from the start. And because I find that this kind of chest breathing and the chronic tightness and tension around here, that has a direct relationship to the sympathetic nervous system and keeping things revved. So while nose breathing across the board, like without a doubt, seal your lips, you know, and breathe through your nose as the nose was intended to be used as your breathing apparatus, your ears for hearing, your eyes for seeing, all of that, right? Mouths are good for a variety of things, but breathing, it's not the best at. It's a backup system only. So teaching people to nose breathe and then working with them with what I call core breathing, which really works with drawing the abdominals in on the exhale, which draws the rib cage in, because the deep abdominals, transverse abdominis, is attached to the lower rib cage, as is the diaphragm. So when the ribs are pulled in, the diaphragm moves into its resting position, which doesn't happen often when people are chest breathers or paradoxical breathers, reverse breathers, and they're breathing in a stressed way. The diaphragm doesn't actually rest. And then as the abdominals relax with the inhale, the diaphragm moves the rib cage back out, which allows for a deep breath, but not necessarily necessary to have it be a big breath. But it automatically helps to move the lower rib cage, which is where the highest level of perfusion is, gas exchange and blood exchange in the lower lobes of the lungs. So the abdominal diaphragmatic breathing laterally out and in really encourages good gas exchange, which helps with everything else that we've talked about in terms of bringing people into function on the biochemical level. It also helps to massage the vagus nerve, which runs right through the diaphragm, and the vagus nerve is directly related to the parasympathetic nervous system. And so it has this calming effect on the nervous system, which has a calming effect on the mind. So I really come at it from the biomechanical, biochemical kind of overlap, because I find that the two together help to ease stress and tension and give people more of a sense of grounding and calm. It slows the breath down naturally. And then I can start to work from there on, okay, put your finger under your nose and just feel how much breath is brushing across your finger and cut it back. Just draw it back like 10%, right? And then just another 10%. But they keep coming back to this abdominal movement, which is very calming and soothing. And so that's how I tend to orient people. And I'm happy to take you and your listeners through that core breathing process, core breathing to what I call subtle breathing, which is like reduced breathing in Buteyko. So I kind of do this progression that helps people when they're more grounded in their body to also not feel so panicky with the idea of breathing less. Because I find if people are really chest breathers and then you have them try to breathe less, it can often spiral into anxiety and create more stress.
Yeah, I found that and still do to a degree, especially with strong breath holds. The panic for me is quite sudden. So I can do a lovely humming breath, and I can get that exhale really nice long, but the minute that I'm not breathing, the panic's there quite quickly. So I don't know if you've got any advice for that, because I do the regular breath holds, small breath holds, medium breath holds. I'll be doing exercises while I'm doing, sort of breath holds. But I always find, I don't know if there's a problem as a child when I was swimming. I'm not sure if I've hidden that memory away, but just the idea of not breathing, the panic is always just waiting to get me at that point. So I don't know if you have any tips there.
I have a couple, and I'm going to actually tie this back to your back pain and our conversation a little while ago about that, because if you were a mouth breather as a child, as you said, you're likely also were a chronic chest breather and possibly still are. And that could mean, because there's, again, this is one of the discussions that I got into in the book, because I found it really fascinating to look at the relationship between functional breathing and functional movement. And they found that people who are functional breathers also have good core strength and don't have back pain. And people who are dysfunctional breathers often have weak cores because they're using their accessory muscles opposed to their abdominal muscles. So again, I'm sort of a master of efficiency. I love that they dovetail, And by teaching people to engage their core properly, they're also supporting good functional breathing. So I actually find that it's not that uncommon that people who have more of a tendency to go into the panic and feel that tightness and tension with the reduced breath often are also not engaging their core well. And so working with that. And the yogis, I want to just flip it back to the wisdom of the ancient yogis. I'm not talking about anybody who's alive today, right? Like yoga is 5,000 years old. And it's lasted because there's, you know, there's something there. There's a lot of rich wisdom there. When the yogis did extended breath holds, they always did it with what's called a bandha. And the bandhas are locks or seals. And what the seals specifically that they used were they would contract and pull in and hold their pelvic floor muscles, their transverse abdominis after the exhale, which would also draw their rib cage in, hold their diaphragm up in its resting position. When it's at rest, the phrenic nerve is not going to be calling for breath. So it would hold that. And they would also do a chin lock here, which would also work with the baroreceptors and be able to enable them to create a shunt-like action with the spleen so that they could keep the heart well bathed with oxygen without it going to the peripheral parts of the body. So it keeps it real central. And they could do extended breath holds of, you know, 3-4, you know, minutes. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, Houdini-like anecdotal stories about the yogis, but they did it because they were actually engaging their core to a very, very intense degree. And they had strengthened those muscles to be able to sustain long contractions that would support them holding their breath longer and longer and longer. Now, in modern yoga, we've often lost the core and the bandhas as a principle of support for our practices, but pranayama was always taught traditionally with the bandhas because of exactly what I'm talking about right here. There's a combination of the structural support that it provides, but also in that it actually calms the phrenic nerve and puts the diaphragm in this resting place where it can kind of take a little snooze and it's not saying breathe, breathe, breathe. Right?
Yeah, oh, that's really interesting because I've heard of the breath locks before, but never really got into the detail of it. That's fascinating. Okay. And in theory, by learning to harness that, then you might experience less panic. Is that what we're saying?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
I would say yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Of course, it takes a lot of mental focus and intention, right? And that's the other piece you asked for tips. So the other piece of yoga and breathing is that pranayama, yes. Which again, these are the breathing practices. There's a whole science to the breath and this whole area of different kinds of breathing patterns using nostril techniques and valving at the throat. And the bandhas are certainly a piece of that. But the other piece is that pranayama was traditionally taught with mantra. So while we often will count, like hold your, you know, count, you know, your 40-second breath hold or whatever, right? And counting might be relaxing and comfortable for some people, but chanting a mantra, like everything's okay while you're doing a breath hold, or I feel at peace, or this is, you know, this is just enough, can actually be calming for the mind and help to take people out of their panic mode. So of course, the traditional mantras were taught in Sanskrit, because that was the language of, you know, that was that the yoga teachings were transmitted in, and it culturally was a fit for us in, you know, in the West. You know, you can chant a mantra in your own language that is a soothing mantra for you. It could be something from, you know, the liturgy, if you're, you know, have a strong connection to church or synagogue, or, you know, something from the Quran that links you to something that is reassuring, right? Like, you know, letting go of letting God, right? Or the Lord's Prayer, or something like that. And that, so that while you're doing this seemingly stressful thing of holding your breath, you're also reciting this thing that's telling you everything is okay.
Yeah.
And that you're held and you're not alone. Really wonderful way of working again with the mind, the mental part, the psychological part, to support the shifting of the breath chemistry until that becomes more easeful and comfortable.
Yeah, wonderful. No, that's so nice. And I could listen to you all day, by the way, talking about breath. It's fascinating. And
fortunately, Mike, I could probably talk all day, but it wouldn't be good for me, you, or your listeners.
We just do a 24-hour live stream where you can just talk to us about breathing. It'd be fantastic. thank you, by the way, because I think there's some really good tips that I can go away and research and look to implement. So thank you. I really appreciate that. Going back to what you said a few minutes ago, yes, please, if you could do a breathing exercise with us in a few minutes, maybe to close off the session.
Yes, I will do that. I'm gonna teach you based on just what you shared with me. Yep. I'm gonna, like, if you were coming to me for a first session, here's how we would do it. Okay.
Wonderful.
I'll do that.
Okay. Yeah, brilliant. So I really wanted to ask you a couple of questions about the diaphragm before we do.
Yes.
So there's a couple of bits in my mind.
Favorite.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Because this is what I can't really get an answer to is, it's kind of a two-parter. So number one is, how is the nose linked to the diaphragm? Because we say that the mouth is linked to upper chest breathing and the nose is linked to the diaphragm. But I would love to know a bit more if you know what that really means. Because I go, okay, if I'm nose breathing, the diaphragm's going to move more, but I don't understand why. It might be the functionality of it. So that'd be good to know that. And then the second part, which is, I've heard people talk about we repress and keep emotions in the diaphragm. And I don't know really what that means. So if you've got anything in those two areas, I would be fascinated to hear some of that.
Yeah. So I'm going to just reveal a little bit of my irreverent side, which is people say all kinds of BS, right? I mean, like, they say things because it sounds good. It doesn't necessarily mean it's true. And I'm referring to that people store emotions in their diaphragm. People store emotions in their calves. People store emotions in their gut. People store emotions in their neck. Our body and our emotional dimension are not separate entities. We think like emotions live in the heart. Well, some emotions live in the heart, right? But sometimes people put their emotions in their jaw.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, where an individual stashes their emotional tension or their fear, or their anger, or their, you know, right? Like, is individual. That said, the breath and emotions are very linked. So if somebody has a lot of emotional repression, then it might be reflected in a lack of movement in the diaphragm. The diaphragm is a muscle. So like any muscle, it can be tight and weak. It's also one of the core muscles. It's not separate from the core. It is actually part of the core. Okay.
Yeah.
So, right. So it can be tight and weak. It can be loose and weak and can be strong and flexible. Like it can be trained or, you know, conditioned based on use. If we are chronic chest breathers, it's going to get conditioned in a particular way. It still moves. Every breath involves the diaphragm. It's just a question of how much and who's playing on team diaphragm. So the diaphragm in my studies, really, I like to talk about it like this. It's a team player. It likes to work with others. Ideally, it works with its primary team are the abdominal pelvic floor muscles. So the pelvic floor muscles, of which there are a multitude, and the transverse abdominis, and to some extent the obliques, so that they support, as I said earlier, this nice lateral kind of jellyfish movement of out and in, right? I use the jellyfish as a visual for the movement of the diaphragm. It also replicates the shape of the diaphragm. Yeah. So it's very nice that way. As opposed to chest breathing, which is up, down, up, down, up, down. And then it's the diaphragm's recruiting the pecs and the upper traps, the levator and the scalenes to assist it in breathing. Very inefficient, very ineffective. And as we have already talked about, more sympathetically driven as opposed to parasympathetically driven, like the abdominal diaphragmatic breathing. So when one is abdominal diaphragmatic breathing, by the very nature and doing the core breathing, as I'm talking about, with the abdominals coming in and moving the diaphragm into its resting position, it returns to its resting tonus, which will translate, because I mentioned the vagus nerve. It's a huge one for the parasympathetic nervous system, both below and above the diaphragm. Different aspects or branches of the vagus nerve, but the diaphragm is basically that movement, that abdominal diaphragmatic movement helps to keep that nerve, flowing well, so that we get good vagal response, which helps us to self-soothe and to regulate our nervous system and our emotions. When one is chronically chest breathing, the vagus does not get that nice massage. And so that also can translate into more sympathetic reactivity. So when somebody says emotions are stuck in the diaphragm, right, I think what they're saying is the diaphragm's stuck.
Right.
I think if you want to break that down, what is that really pointing to factually is that the diaphragm is kind of stuck somewhere between its full range, right? It doesn't go into full range. It's like a muscle that doesn't have full extension or full contraction. It's weak and tight. It's kind of locked in this shortened position, and it doesn't have full range, which means it's not resilient. So the diaphragm can also get like that. And in that, the emotions, of course, are maintaining that dysfunction in the diaphragm. And the diaphragm is also keeping one a little more emotionally frail or fragile or more easily triggered. And yes. So there's that, you know, wag the tail phenomenon. Quickly, in terms of the question about nose breathing and the diaphragm, more positive resistance with the breath increases diaphragmatic action. So mouth breathing has very little positive airway resistance, which is why the diaphragm doesn't get moved as much with mouth breathing.
Right.
Nose breathing, because of the turbinates and the way the whole structure is set up, there's already more positive resistance. It has to, you know, it's a smaller funnel. It requires, there's already a little, instead of it just being a big old wide hose, right? It's a narrower hose.
Yes.
And so it also has a more directed flow. And so it directs, that flow gets directed into that more movement of the diaphragm itself.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And then I guess it's going down the lower part of the lungs, and that's associated maybe with the diaphragm a little bit. Okay.
Yes. Well, and then the lower part of the lungs is where there's more blood there.
Yes.
More blood flow there than in the upper lobes of the lungs. So there's more efficiency in terms of gas exchange. Better, more oxygen coming into the arterial system, more CO2 being released into the venous system to be breathed out. So through the venous system, so into the lungs. So it's better on all levels to breathe, as I say, low, slow, and light.
Yeah.
Low, slow, and light. Those are my three words. Yeah.
Low, slow, and light. Yeah. Because that's the thing, isn't it? Because when people hear take a deep breath, it doesn't mean a big gasp, which is what I think all think it means.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Might want to change the name of your podcast to Low, Slow, and Light.
There we go. Yeah. Or like a little subtitle in italics. This does not mean gasp. It means do it gently. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Wonderful. So yeah, we've got about 10 minutes left then. So over to you if you're very happy. I would love to be guided through an exercise. Am I okay to stand or do I need to sit?
Sitting will actually be a little bit easier to do this. Let's have you place your hands on your belly. And I'm going to have you work with your exhalation breath. And I'm going to have you, as you exhale, I'm going to have you say shh, as if you were like telling somebody to be quiet because the baby's sleeping, right?
Okay.
All right.
Shh.
Yeah. And you should feel your abdominal muscles kind of contracting inward away from your hands as you do that, right? Okay. So let's have you do it a few more times. And on your in-breath, you can close your lips and just take a very gentle breath in. And as you do that, just allow the abdomen to relax. So you're not striving to take more in, you're just relaxing your belly, right? And then on your exhale, and feel that inward hug, almost like your belly's hugging your spine. Good. And then relaxing the belly on the in breath. Maybe twice more like that. And now that you have the felt sense of the abdominals drawing inward and upward, right? It's kind of like from the pubic bone to the navel to the solar plexus. There's this inward lateral hug happening and then a relaxation from the top down on the in-breath. Then see if you can continue to work with the abdominal muscles that way, bottom to top on the exhale, relaxing top to bottom on the inhale without opening the mouth. So just nose breathing now, right? And then since you have some familiarity with breath holding, you can do the exhale hugging inward and then just pause for maybe 3 to 5 seconds and do a little breath hold, a little breath suspension afterwards to give a little more strength and support to those abdominal core muscles. So that's your transverse abdominis that's moving in as you exhale and out as you inhale. And we want to get it stronger. It's it wraps around, it actually forms like a little corset. It attaches to the pubic bone at the bottom and to the ribs at the top. And then it actually laterally wraps around the entire waist and it doesn't attach to the spine, but it attaches to the connective tissue that attaches to the spine. So if at any point you start to feel like you've lost that connection to the abdominals on the exhale, and you want to go back and do the shh, you know, it's a nice, I call it training wheels. It just helps to get the synchronicity between the exhalation and the abdominals activated that way. And then, you know, slowing the exhale down, and at the same time, thinking of with it being slower doesn't mean it has to be bigger, right? It can stay very thread thin, just very like a light whisper of breath out, right? And then a gentle, relaxed intake of breath. So it's almost with this core breathing as if the active part of the breath becomes the exhale and the inhale becomes passive. So really, you don't have to even put any effort into getting breath in, just simply let go of the abdominals. And can you feel that the breath just happens? So that's your diaphragm. The diaphragm's really smart. If you take the diaphragm into its resting position, and the resting phase for the diaphragm is exhale. And if you take it into its restful position by engaging the abdominals this way and drawing the lower ribs in, when you let go of that contraction, the diaphragm knows exactly how to breathe you. You can trust it. It will simply move down. That's its active phase, and press the lower ribs out, creating the vacuum for the lungs to fill. Right. So notice what's happening as you're doing core breathing, just noticing what's happening in your mind, what's happening with the breath itself, your overall sense of tension or relaxation or calm or kind of jazz, just what you're experiencing. Okay. And now I'm going to have you just take a finger underneath your nose and right. And just observe as you continue with the core breathing, the quantity of air that's brushing across your finger, and just scale it back a bit, 10%. 20%, to where you just get that, just that hint of a little bit less than satisfying. And it's really important that you maintain a sustainable light breath, right? You don't want to push yourself over the edge of the cliff, right? So you want to find what I call the Zen zone of tolerable discomfort, right? Where it's just a little less than satisfying, that idea of portion control. And yet there's still this sense of ease in that. And when you feel like you've got that level, then you can release your hand and bring it back onto your belly. And continue with the core breath, but maybe a little bit less exaggerated, so that you're shifting now from core breathing to what I call subtle breathing. It's still abdominally diaphragmatic in its action, right? And there's still that sense of grounding and quieting as you draw the belly in, but it's very light. Everything becomes a little lighter and more subtle. It's the light touch of engagement with the abdominals in with the exhale and releasing out with the inhale. And maybe as you're doing this, as you're exhaling, you can also just, or in the pause, let's say, after the exhale is having you do a 3 or 5 second pause, you can add a little mantra that's just like here and now. Like it's just calling you into presence, just being here and now, right? And there's something about the core breathing that actually reinforces that, yeah? Like there's a sense of connection to your lower body, your seat on the chair, the groundedness of your posture, right? So that it's just quieting everything up top, right? Here and now. So then let's take this into a breath hold. So as you are moving into your breath hold, you're going to inhale, exhale lightly through the nose and then seal your nose. I'm going to have you sway gently as you do this. And as you sway, again, it's like here and now, here and now, here and now, here and now. And tuning in to when you feel that it's time to breathe and you're going to let go so that, you know, the breath is perhaps a little amplified in the first breath or two, but then bring it right back down to your abdominal diaphragmatic movement, right? Come back to your mantra here and now. Settle your breath. And after you feel like it's settled, then take another, do another cycle of short breath hold. Again, with the sway and here and now. Just hear yourself, the pace of the mantra even has a kind of slow, comforting, sort of soothing rhythm to it. Here and now, here and now, here and now, here and now. Good. And then again, noticing there's a little more chest expansion in that initial breath after the breath hold, but then you work with it, right? Low and slow. Hug the abdominals in gently. You can even bring them in a little bit more, right? And pause, and that will help to settle the breath more easily. Good. And then relax your hands and just keep your eyes closed for a moment. Let your breath just return to a natural breath. And notice then if you are able to sustain that connection to the abdominal diaphragmatic rhythm, right? Like I said, recruiting the abdominals in a gentle fashion, right? To be the primary players on team diaphragm and maintain the passivity of the chest and the neck and the jaw. Right. So then gently opening your eyes and let's hear what your experience was.
First of all, thank you for that. I already feel quite relaxed. I can already just tell the way I'm speaking. That's calmed me down, which is quite nice. It's a funny one because I'm always clenching my stomach in. I can remember pretty much when it happened, I was sort of 15, 16, and I started working in a pub, in a restaurant kitchen, and started eating a lot of fries, chips.
Yeah.
So the weight gain happened quite quickly. And so there was always this element of sucking your stomach because you can't let people see. And so what I tend to find happens now is even when I'm just walking around the house, I'll be like, oh, I'm sucking my gut in. I didn't even realize, let it go. And then it will suck back in again. So would this help with that then? Would this help to break that?
Yeah, cycle? I just, one of my students who's in my training program, she just posted on Instagram a picture of herself doing gymnastics when she was a young girl and her waist is probably this big. And she said, one of the things that the breathing program has made her aware of how much she's worked with that tightening the belly in and kind of like always trying to appear thinner, right? Which is pervasive and certainly among women, but also men as well, right? And the media and sort of all the images that were shown about, you know, the smaller your waist, the better you are.
Yes.
So the relaxation of the abdomen in contrast to the contraction of the abdomen, really important to be able to do both, to go in both directions. Chronically tight muscles, and this goes back to the conversation on the back as well, chronically tight muscles aren't strong.
Yes.
Tight and tense is a weak position for a muscle to be. We want, you know, resilient muscles that have full range and strength and capacity in that full range.
Yes.
So when the abdominals get sort of locked in that tight position, they're also locking the diaphragm in position too. So this could be a big piece of why you feel the tension, even though you've been doing this breath work and you're, you know, clearly benefiting from it, and yet you're feeling like, but there's still this anxiety. That in-between place for the diaphragm to be will keep firing the phrenic nerve. Phrenic nerve never gets to relax. It's never off. It's kind of like it's in this hypertonic state of at any moment, like breathe, breathe, breathe. It's going to be calling. It's kind of like, you know,
yes,
it's revved up like a little gerbil on a wheel. So this going into the full contraction where the full relaxation of the diaphragm and then letting it go and letting it have its full width and breadth, right? With the inhalation, it retrains it and it also helps to calm and relax that phrenic nerve.
Interesting. No, that was a gift that I will be playing with and utilizing. I can obviously play that back and everybody watching can do that as well. So Robin, thank you. I'm conscious of your time because I did commit to letting you go 5 minutes ago and we're still here, but thank you so much. I'm keen to direct people to you and your course that you've got going on at the moment. So would you mind just sharing a little bit about that? The link will be below, but if you could just talk a little.
Essential yoga therapy. I do work with people from all over the world via Zoom doing breathing as well as yoga therapy for all different kinds of conditions. So if you're interested, you can contact me through my website, essentialyogatherapy.com. If there's any yoga teachers or yoga therapists listening, my course, Restore Your Prana, is a year-long online course. And again, I have students from all over the world. We've got another cohort starting in October, mid-October. So if you're interested, contact me and you can look up on my website. There's lots of information about the Restore Your Prana program. We have two cohorts going now, a group of people that are just finishing up and they're really thrilled with what they know and can now actually teach and the confidence they feel with talking about pranayama, breath physiology, and being able to titrate and adapt practices for individuals working with them on all those levels, including working with chronic anxiety and sleep issues.
Wonderful. So the link is down below, everybody. Please go and have a look. I really enjoyed that one-to-one session. So I from what I've seen, I loved it. So please go and have a look. And Robin, I'm going to have to try and convince you to come back for a part two maybe at some point, because I feel like we could talk all day. Thank you. So I'll let you go. Everybody, thank you for watching. And we'll see you on the next Breathcast. Cheers. Thank you, Robin, so much.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey everybody, thank you for sticking right the way through to the end of this Breathcast. I really hope you enjoyed the guest that we just had. If you haven't done so already, please like, subscribe and hit that bell notification, because we've got so many more top experts and wonderful human beings coming onto this show, and I don't want you to miss any of those great conversations. So please do that, and that would be really, really appreciated. Just a couple of quick messages for me. If you haven't done so, please leave a comment and hit that like button. I read every single comment that goes onto this channel, and I do my best to respond to them. So you might have a question for me, maybe a question that you want me to ask to a future guest, or you just want to put something into the community, take a few seconds to do that. It helps the YouTube algorithm, and it's a way for us to connect as well. So I'd really appreciate it. Just a couple of comments. Anything that you've got would be absolutely great. I do have a second YouTube channel called Binaural Beats Unleashed. And if you haven't done so and you wanted to subscribe over there, it's completely free. I'm working with a number of artists at the moment to bring different binaural beats. It's essentially different frequencies that are able to help us get into different states. So for example, I use binaural beats to study when I'm building my breathwork courses. And I just go onto YouTube, type in binaural beats for study, pop in the headphones, and it just helps me get into state for the next few hours where I'm focusing, no distractions, there's no rap music going on. I can just crack on and get stuck into something and not be distracted. But you can also use binaural beats for meditation, mindfulness, yoga. People use them to help them get to sleep. They want to use them to kind of get them into a different state. Freeform breath work is another great thing. You can put on an hour's binaural beats track. You just lay down. Just bring some awareness to your breath, see how you're breathing. Maybe you want to alter it in some way, maybe do some stretching. You know, so some wonderful things there. So help me grow that community. Please pop on over, hit that subscribe button. I'd really, really appreciate it, and we'll grow in another way for us to connect. I'm on Instagram, takeadeepbreath.co.uk. If you could hit that follow button on there, that would be ace. There's loads of content that we're putting on there. Try and cut clips up and just have, you know, another way for you to digest some wonderful information about breath work, breathing exercises, and information from our top experts. Sometimes we don't have an hour to watch a whole breath cast, so I'll do my best to maybe get a 3 or 4 minute clip together just so to give some information. Go, oh, that I forgot that, or I didn't know that particular thing about breathing. So yeah, takeadeepbreath.co.uk on Instagram. And finally, I've taken some of the top breathing exercises from this channel, and I've converted them into MP3s and just put them in a little MP3 store, and the link is below. For $4 or $5, you can own one of these breathing exercises forever, ad free. If you're going somewhere, you're not gonna have Wi-Fi, you want to turn your phone onto airplane mode, that's yours. You keep that. There's no ads. And $4 or $5 just comes my way to support the channel and the breathcast. So hopefully it's a bit of a win-win. You get an exercise for life, and we get a couple of dollars to help us keep going. So that's it. So thank you so much. We will see you on the next breathcast or breathing exercise. If you're here for a breathcast and now you're thinking, what should I do next? Maybe it's worth trying one of our breathing exercises. I'm going to link to a couple of them now so you can try those breathing exercises, or maybe you want to check out another breathcast like this one. So we'll there we go. Thank you so much. Take care. Cheers.